This is Murder Bucket. Good evening, Murder Bucket family, and welcome back to Tuesday. Tonight, we are doing something just a little bit different with our episode. Currently, I have an Instagram live stream going, and you are going to be able to hear the episode and watch the episode as I record it. So we are finally back with part two of our Timothy McVeigh story. February has been a little bit insane. As you can see, I finally have my microphone working and the software is finally recognizing that there is a microphone. A little bit of a backstory is my lovely cat decided that he wanted to just crash right into the microphone one day, and he ripped out the micro USB that attaches the microphone to our computer. And after that, it just stopped recognizing that it was ever even plugged in. And the weird thing is, my husband tried many, many times with many, many different cords throughout the house to try and get it to work. None of them would recognize that the microphone was plugged into the computer. It would not show up on our software, and we couldn't figure it out. It turns out that apparently this microphone didn't like any of those old cables, and we had to get a brand new one. Which also, fun fact, is very hard to find in the store because Target had zero, literally zero of them. So our friend had to actually go get one because my husband and two of our friends do a podcast together, which is called Is This Scary? You can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts. But we're finally back with tonight's episode. Finally going to do part two of the Timothy McVeigh story. And because it's March, we are going to do our True Crime News Corner for February. So let's go ahead and get started since we are doing Instagram Live. And let me know if you like this. Tell me if it's weird. Tell me if you want me to start a TikTok, and then maybe if I get enough followers, we can do TikTok Lives and maybe it'll be a little bit easier and a bunch of people can watch. So we're going to go ahead and get started. We're going to start with Timothy and right before he actually did the Oklahoma City bombing. So this is just, I think, a couple of months before. We're going to start with the federal building plans. So Timothy decided that he wanted to do damage to the government in a big way. So he started writing plans to blow up a federal building. He wrote two letters to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. The first was titled Constitutional Defenders, and the second was titled AFT Reed. And in these letters, he called the government officials racist tyrants and stormtroopers. In one of the letters, he wrote this: AFT, all of your tyrannical motherfuckers will swing in the wind one day for your treasonous actions against the Constitution of the United States. Remember the Nuremberg War Trials. So, according to Google.com, the Nuremberg War Trials were held by the Allies against representatives of the defeated Nazi Germans for plotting and carrying out invasions of other countries against their citizens in World War II. Timothy then wrote another letter to recruit a customer named Stephen Colburn. This letter stated this: a man with nothing left to lose is a very dangerous man, and his energy / anger can be focused toward a common / righteous goal. What am I asking you to do, then, is sit back and be honest with yourself. Do you have kids and a wife? Would you back out at the last minute to care for your family? Are you interested in keeping your firearms for their current / future monetary value, or would you drag that 06 through rock, swamp, and cactus to get off the needed shot? In short, I'm not looking for talkers. I am looking for fighters, and if you are a Fed, think twice. Think twice about the constitutions you are supposedly enforcing, and think twice about catching us with our guard down. You will lose, just like Megan did, and your family will lose. So Timothy moved on to a campaign of individual assassinations with eligible targets that included Attorney General Janet Reno, Judge Walter Smith Jr. of the Federal District Court, who handled the Branch Davidian trial, and Lone Horiuchi, a member of the FBI hostage rescue team. He claimed that he wanted Janet Reno to take full responsibility, indeed, not just words. He later decided that such assassinations were too difficult, and because federal agents had become soldiers, he should strike them at their command centers. This is where it got bad. While Timothy was working at a lakeside campground near his old army post in Oklahoma, he and Terry constructed an ANFO explosive device that was mounted in the back of a rented Ryder truck. This bomb consisted of about 5,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate and nitromethane. On April 19, 1995, Timothy drove the truck to the front of the Alfred P. Murray Federal Building, just as its offices were opening that day. Before he got to his destination, he lit a 2-minute fuse. At 9:02 a.m., the large explosive device destroyed the north half of the building, killing 168 people, including 19 children in the daycare center that was located on the second floor. 684 people were injured. Timothy claims that if he had known that there was a daycare center on the second floor, he might have chosen a different target, but it was a little too late now. According to the Oklahoma City Memorial Institute for the Prevention of Terrorism, more than 300 buildings in the city were damaged that day. More than 12,000 volunteers and rescue workers took part in this rescue, recovery, and support operations following the bombing. In the wreckage from the bombing, police found a vehicle identification number of a rear axle vehicle. They were able to identify it as a Ryder rental box truck that was rented in Junction City, Kansas. The employees at Ryder worked with police to identify the person who rented the vehicle. This person was named Robert Kling. Police posted the name and a sketch of this mysterious person. The manager of a local hotel identified the mysterious man as Timothy McVeigh. So apparently, Robert Kling was his alias. Directly after the bombing, Timothy was driving on Interstate 35 near Perry, Oklahoma, and passed State Trooper Charles Hanger. Trooper Hanger noticed that the 1977 Mercury Marquis did not have a license plate, so he pulled him over. When Trooper Hanger approached the vehicle, Timothy told him that he had a gun under his jacket. He was arrested for driving without a license plate and the possession of an illegal firearm. Timothy's concealed weapons permit was not valid in Oklahoma. 3 days after he was arrested, he was identified as the Oklahoma City bomber. On August 10, 1995, Timothy was indicted on 11 federal counts that included conspiracy to use a weapon of mass destruction, use of a weapon of mass destruction, destruction with the use of explosives, and 8 counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of the law enforcement officers. On February 20, 1996, the court granted a change to venue and ordered the case be transferred from Oklahoma City to the district court in Denver. The reason for this granting was the judge felt as though the jury in Oklahoma would be too impartial. So during his trial, Timothy tried to get his lawyers to use a necessity defense, which meant that necessity may be either a possible justification or an excuse for breaking the law. They ended up not doing this because they could not prove that he was in imminent danger from the government. He tried to argue that imminent did not necessarily mean immediate. If they had decided to go this route, they would have had to also argue that his bombing was justifiable response to what Timothy believed were the crimes of the U.S. government at Waco. On June 2nd of 1997, Timothy was found guilty on 11 counts of federal indictment. Although 168 people were killed, the murder charges brought against him were for the 8 federal agents who were on duty when the bombing destroyed the Murray Building. After the verdict was read, Timothy turned to his mother and said, "Think of it this way. When I was in the Army, you didn't see me for years. Think of me that way now, like I am away in the Army again, on an assignment for the military." So on June 13th, the jury recommended Timothy receive the death penalty. The U.S. Department of Justice could only decide his sentence based on the deaths of the 8 federal employees, because the deaths of the other 160 fell under the jurisdiction of the state of Oklahoma. Because Timothy ended up being sentenced to death, Oklahoma decided not to file murder charges, and before he was officially sentenced, Timothy addressed the court for the first time and said this: "If the court please, I wish to use the words of Justice Louis Brandeis, dissenting in Olmsted versus the United States, to speak for me. He wrote, 'Our government is the potent, the omnipresent teacher. For good and for ill, it teaches the whole people by its example.' That's all I have to say." Timothy attempted to appeal his death sentence with the Supreme Court of the United States, but it was denied on April 8, 1999. He then requested that his execution be televised internationally. That was immediately denied. Entertainment Network Incorporated, an internet company that produces adult-themed websites, tried and failed to sue for the rights to broadcast his execution. Timothy ended up dropping the remaining appeals that he had lined up, stating that he would rather die than spend the rest of his life in prison. On November 21, 1997, President Bill Clinton signed a special legislation that barred Timothy and any other veteran convicted of capital crimes from being buried in any military cemetery. While Timothy was incarcerated, he sent a letter to the Buffalo News the day before his execution that read this: "I am sorry these people had to lose their lives, but that's the nature of the beast. It's understood going in what the human toll will be. If there is a hell, then I'll be in good company with the lot of fighter pilots who also had to bomb innocents to win the war. I knew I wanted this before it happened. I knew that my objective was state-assisted suicide, and when it happens, it's in your face. You just did something you're trying to say should be illegal for medical personnel." Timothy was then transferred to the Federal Bureau of Prisons from USP Florence AD Max to the federal death row at USP Terre Haute in Terre Haute, Indiana. His execution date was set for May 16, 2001. 6 days prior to his execution, the FBI turned over thousands of documents of evidence that it had previously withheld to Timothy's attorneys. As a result of this, the U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft stayed his execution for just 1 month. It was rescheduled for June 11, 2001. So what was Timothy McVeigh's last meal? He asked for the following: 2 pints of mint chocolate chip ice cream. Now, I have to say that mint chocolate chip ice cream is one of my favorite ice cream flavors, but I don't think that there is any possibility of being able to finish 2 pints by myself. If this is the very last thing that I am going to eat, I would choose not to have a stomach ache right before I'm going to be executed. So please tell me what your favorite ice cream flavor is and if you could finish 2 pints by yourself. Timothy chose William Ernest Henley's 1875 poem Invictus as his final statement. The poem reads this: "Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeoning of change, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how changed the punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." Larry Witcher, whose brother died in the bombing, stated that Timothy had an expressionless blank stare. At 7:14 a.m. on June 11th of 2001, Timothy McVeigh was executed by lethal injection. His body was cremated at Maddox Ryan Funeral Home, and his ashes were given to his lawyer. Timothy had once considered having his ashes scattered at the site of the memorial where the building once stood, but decided that that would be too vengeful, too raw, and too cold. He also expressed interest in donating his organs, but that was prohibited by prison regulation. And that concludes the story of Timothy McVeigh. And now we are going to move on to
True Crime News Corner.
A 62-year-old woman was brutally dragged along a sidewalk in New York after her purse, keys, phone, and glasses were stolen. She suffered non-life-threatening injuries. Five migrants were arrested in an overnight raid as a part of the crackdown on a citywide moped robbery scheme to steal women's phones. There have been over 60 incidents reported across New York since November of 2023. A jury in Michigan has found Jennifer Crumbly, the mother of school shooter Ethan Crumbly, guilty of involuntary manslaughter in connection with the shooting deaths of four students at Oxford High School in November of 2021. The jury deliberated for only 11 hours. A U.S. military helicopter went missing while carrying five Marines from Nevada to California. It was found several hours later after authorities launched search efforts. All five Marines on board were confirmed dead after their helicopter crashed in the remote area of Southern California. The bodies of three people were recovered from a Pennsylvania home the day after it went up in flames during a gunfight that left two police officers wounded. The incident started when police responded to a report that an 11-year-old had been shot. When officers arrived, they were both shot once by someone inside, so they immediately began returning fire. A woman in a trench coat opened fire with a long gun inside celebrity pastor Joel Osteen's megachurch in Texas, sending worshipers rushing to find safety. Two off-duty officers confronted and killed the shooter. Two other people were shot, including a 5-year-old boy. After the woman was shot, she told officers that she had a bomb, but authorities were unable to locate an explosive on her or in her vehicle. Sheriff's deputies in Houston repeatedly shot at a woman after mistaking her for an intruder inside her friend's apartment. She was shot 5 times. Over 2 dozen bullets were fired. The two deputies have been placed on administrative leave, and the sheriff's department states that it will be conducting an internal investigation. And finally, Ricky Alderete was charged for the theft of the bronze statue of baseball player Jackie Robinson in Wichita, Kansas, and attempting to sell it for scraps. The statue was found days later in a trash can smoking after he attempted to set it on fire. He has been charged with 4 counts of felony theft, aggravated criminal damage to property, as well as 2 counts of identity theft and making false information. And that concludes tonight's episode. Have a great night! Thanks for listening. Catch us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for all your Murder Bucket updates.